On the screen, I'm going to put a verse. You don't have to turn there. This is a verse that's well known, but it's really important. This verse right here gives us the problem that you and I face. It's a problem that every single person faces today. It says in Romans 3:23, "For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God." Right there in Romans 3:23, we have a problem. Right at the beginning it says, "For all." That means every single human being that has ever lived have sinned. And that means they fell short of the glory of God. This means that because of our sin, we cannot have a relationship with God. This means because of our sin, we cannot spend eternity in heaven. This means because of our sin, we fall short. Just like Matthew trying with all of his strength to touch that $1,000 bill, no matter what he did, he fell short. You and I, no matter what we do, no matter how hard we try to do right, we have sinned. And before we move any further, I need us to understand what the word sin means. It's really important that you understand this, because if you don't understand what sin is and you don't come to the conclusion that I, as a human being, that you, as a human being, are a sinner, then the rest of this message will make no sense. And the rest of this message won't matter. We have to all come to the place where we recognize what sin is and that this verse is true. We are sinners. And sin is very simply explained by this. I'm hoping, and most of us have a Bible in the room. And in this Bible, God has given us a number of commands. He's told us to live a certain way. He's told us to be humble. He's told us not to lie. He's told us not to steal. He's told us not to be mean to people. He's told us to love others. And sin is any time that we live contrary to what the Bible says. Sin is any time you take what God has said and you don't do it. You take what God has said and you break what he's told you to do. This means that if any one of you in this room has ever lied, then you're a sinner. This means that if anyone in this room has ever been proud, think you're way better than everyone else, then you are a sinner. This means that if anyone in this room has been mean to someone else, maybe you've called someone a mean name, maybe you've been angry at them and you've hurt them, you've hit them, you've pushed them, you've shoved them, whatever it is, that's not loving another person. That breaks God's law. That means you're a sinner. And here's the problem. For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. And God has a response to sin. The next verse we're going to look at is God's view of our sin. It says in Habakkuk 1:13, you don't have to turn there, it's on the screen or it will be. It says, "Thou art of purer eyes than to behold evil, and canst not look on iniquity." Well, here's a big problem. So we just established in the previous verse that every person in this room has sinned because we've broken God's law. And here in Habakkuk 1:13, God's response to sin, it says that he's of pure eyes and to behold evil, and he cannot look on iniquity. This means that God cannot tolerate our sin. This is because God is perfect. This is because God is holy. This is because God has never sinned. There's no sin. There's no wickedness in God. He is perfect. And he's so pure. He's so perfect that when he sees sin, he looks away. He cannot tolerate it. And furthermore, we see in Romans 6:23 that he has to also punish sin. It says, "For the wages of sin is death." This whole passage right here, it says, this is God, when he sees sin, he's got to punish it. When it says wages of sin, it means what we deserve for our sin is death. And the death this is referring to isn't just simply dying and not living again. This death is referring to being separated from God. Separated from God in a real place called hell. The inability to be in heaven. Because we're sinners. Because God can't tolerate sin. Because God has to punish sin. The best way and the easiest way for us to understand this passage is this. How many of you guys know Miss Rosie? Miss Rosie, raise your hand. This is Miss Rosie. She's pretty cool. Now let's say that Miss Emma, if you could raise your hand. Miss Emma's pretty cool too. You'll see her around every once in a while. Let's say Miss Emma just gets fed up with Miss Rosie. Let's just say that, man, they've been working together for the past half a summer, and man, Miss Rosie's just really getting on Miss Emma's nerves. So Miss Emma, being the kind, sweet person that she is, says, you know what? I'm sick and tired of Miss Rosie. I'm going to go get revenge because I'm sick and tired of Miss Rosie. So let's say Miss Emma, she looks up Miss Rosie on the internet, finds her address, drives on over to Miss Rosie's address, walks over into her house, takes a baseball bat, and begins to smash everything in sight. All right? She goes into Miss Rosie's room, computer, blammo, gone. All right? Window, bam, gone. Mirror, bam, gone. Phone, wham, 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 definitely gone. Goes over to the bed, flips that bed up on its side, pulls out some gasoline. I know. Miss Emma's savage. Miss Emma begins to pour gasoline all over Miss Rosie's bedroom. Takes out a lighter, boom, boom, ba-boom, shoo-boom. Miss Rosie's whole room has been destroyed. And Miss Rosie comes home, and she is in distress. Oh no! You've destroyed my stuff! But Miss Rosie is a pretty smart person. And Miss Rosie knows that Miss Emma's a nice, sweet, crazy person. So Miss Rosie has installed a security system. And so she got the whole, and it's digital. So she pops out the USB, plugs it into the camera, download over to the judge down at the courthouse, plugs it into the judge's computer, click, judge, watch. And we watch as we have in perfect camera glory Miss Emma destroying Miss Rosie's stuff. Now, we take that footage and we put it on a big screen. We take a 12-person jury. We set them before the screen. They say, yep, she's guilty. We've seen it with our own eyes. The judge then has the opportunity to pass a sentence. He needs to declare whether or not Miss Rosie or Miss Emma is going to be punished for what she has done, because Miss Emma has clearly broken the law. She did wrong. She fell short of what the law says is right. Now, if that judge, seeing the footage, looks at Miss Rosie and says, well, that's tough. Miss Emma, you are not guilty. Miss Emma gets to go free. No punishment, no nothing. If that judge did that, we'd all look at the judge and we'd be like, are you kidding me? Are you not just? Did you not see the footage? If that judge doesn't punish clear lawbreaking, that judge is not just. But God is not like that judge. Rather, God is like a judge that when he sees that footage, when he says, yep, you've clearly broken the law, Miss Emma, then you must suffer the consequences. You must be sent to prison. For you and I, God has seen all of our sin, and he knows that every one of us are a sinner. He knows that we've broken his law. And according to this passage, he must punish it. He can't be an unjust judge. He can't be a judge that just says, no, you can go free. You've sinned, but it's okay. No, he has to take that sin and he has to punish it. If I finished up tonight, if I ended right here, if I said, yep, this is it, that's all there is, you and I would have no hope whatsoever. Because we found out that we're sinners. We saw that God has to punish that sin, and you and I would be in a big problem. But one of my favorite things, and what I'm most excited about, and I hope that you're paying attention tonight, I hope that you're dialed in, that you're focused, because God doesn't leave it there. God doesn't leave us in this problem. God's response is a punishment, but then he provides a solution. This passage of Scripture is so well known, but please, please pay attention. John 3:16 is extraordinarily important to our lives. It says, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life." Right here, this passage so clearly states that God saw the sin that you and I have committed. He saw that he had to punish it, and he figured out a way for you and I to be cleared of that punishment. It says that God so loved the world. It says that he so cared, that he cared about you and I so much that he provided a solution. He took his only begotten Son, Jesus Christ, a perfect person. He sent him to earth to live a perfect life. A life in which he didn't break any of God's laws. A life which meant that Jesus Christ could have a relationship with God. He could spend eternity in heaven because he did no wrong. But at the end of his life, he was taken to a cross. He was nailed to the cross, and he was killed. He took a punishment even though he was guiltless. He was punished even though he did nothing wrong. That's because he was taking our sin. Because when he died on the cross, he was taking our place. He was saying, "I'll die. I'll take the punishment that everyone else deserves, even though I've never sinned." The best way for me to illustrate this is like this. I have right here this bag. I have nothing inside this bag. We're going to take this bag and we're going to treat it like a place of decision. This represents belief. This represents trust or faith. Over here, I have two cards. In one of these cards, I have Christ's record. If this right here said Emma's record, it might say something like, destroyed some stuff, broke Miss Rosie's vehicle, destroyed her computer. But for Christ, his record is perfect. Christ's record says that he is sinless, meaning he has done nothing to break God's law. Christ's record says that he's holy, which means he's completely free of all sin. This means that he's accepted by God. This means that he's free to live with God. This is who Christ is. This is what Christ did. But in this second piece of paper, I have my record. This is true of who I am. This is true of every single person in this room. According to the beginning verse that we looked at, this is who we are. This is Bodhi's record. Lying, anger, discontentment, selfishness, and pride. This is true of me. In fact, this is true of every single person in this room. This is who we are. For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. And just like at the beginning, Matthew tried to run and jump. He tried to grab that $1,000 bill, and he couldn't do it. He fell short. Because this is true of every single person in this room, because we are like this, we deserve to be punished. No matter how hard we try, no matter what we do, we cannot make our way to heaven. We cannot be saved from the punishment we deserve on our own strength. You see, Matthew needed another way. His way didn't work. He needed help. That's what Christ does. He helps us by dying on the cross. And all he asks is that we come to a place, and it says that for whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. When I come to a place where I decide, you know what, I believe that Jesus Christ died for my sin. I believe that I am a sinner. I believe that there's no way for me to get to heaven except through what Christ did for me on the cross. When I come to that place and I say, you know what, I believe that. I have faith in that. That's the only thing I believe in. I'm not going to trust in my own strength. I'm not going to try to run as fast as I can to get to heaven. I'm not going to try to do as many good works as I can to get to heaven. I believe in only Jesus Christ. It says, for whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. What's amazing is that when you and I come to that place where we make that decision, where we believe that. A radical change happens to these papers. Right here, I have a record. This used to be my record. This used to be true of who I was. But when I came to a place where I believed in Jesus Christ alone, God looked at what Christ did, and he put Christ's name where my name is. He replaced my name. He took that sin and he placed it on Christ. And he punished Christ for what I did, for what I deserved. And what's amazing is then on my record, he took Christ's name, crossed it off, and he put my name. When you and I come to a place where we believe that Jesus Christ died on the cross for our sin, a radical change happens in our life. Instead of us being attributed for this sin, instead of us being guilty of this, God cleans us of that sin. He washes it away. And he views us as he views Christ. Sinless, holy, accepted by God, free to live with God. Nothing I did got me here. It wasn't my own works. It wasn't because I went to church. It wasn't because I got baptized. It wasn't because I did all these good things. This exchange happened only through faith. This exchange happened only when I believe that Jesus Christ died on the cross for my sins. This exchange is offered to every single person in this room. Every one of us here can experience that same exchange. And once we've been exchanged, once our sin has been wiped away, it's always wiped away. There's nothing we can do that will reverse it. There's nothing that we can do that can make us lose our salvation. It says, "And God hath both raised up the Lord and will also raise up us by his own power." This means that God has the power to get rid of the sin in our lives and to raise us up to a new life with him. So we're free to live with him for eternity. Just like he took Christ. And after Christ died on the cross, he was only dead for 3 days. Because Christ rose again. He came back to life. This presents us with our choice, your choice. It says in Ephesians 2, 8 through 9, this is the passage I had you turn to earlier. It says, "For by grace are ye saved through faith, and that not of yourselves, it is the gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast." This is your choice. It's for by grace are you saved, through faith. It's not what I can do. It's simply accepting a free gift that God offers me. It's not by my own works. It's not by Matthew running as hard as he can. I can't do it on my own. I simply must accept what Christ has already done for me. I have one final illustration tonight. As I was growing up here, I worked to work with horses. And on a horse, they have a saddle that goes on top of them, and that's what you sit on. But if you're sitting on a saddle, you have to make sure that saddle is secured to the horse. And if it's not, you'll fall off of the horse. So what they do is they install a little belt that goes from the top of the saddle all the way down underneath the horse up to the other side. And it acts kind of like a belt. Connects one side of the saddle to the other side of the saddle, wraps around their belly, you get it all tight, and it makes sure that that saddle stays strong. It makes sure that saddle stays secure. Make sure you can't fall over. Now, here's what horses do, because they don't really like it to be tight. They'll fill their stomach up with air, with as much air as they can put in their stomach. And then, when you think you have a nice tight cinch, which is what that belt is called, if you think it's tight, about 10 minutes later, while you're riding around the arena, that horse will let all of the air out of its stomach. And now your cinch, your belt, is just kind of dangling there. You know, useless. It has no point because it's just flopping around. And now your saddle is, you know, it's sliding around left and right, and you can barely hold on. That's what horses do. They're really smart. So you have to be checking your cinch on a continual basis to make sure that you're not going to fall off. Now, my cousin, Clay, was sitting on one of our biggest horses we have here at Ironwood. He's sitting in the middle of the arena on his horse, and little did he know, his horse had done that. Filled itself with air. He thought he was on a secure saddle, and then he let all that air out, and now my cousin's saddle is loosey-goosey, and it's just flopping around. But right next to him is the head wrangler, Mr. Ben. Mr. Ben's there to help. Mr. Ben can help him at any point if he needs help. Now, my cousin, sitting on his horse, his cinch no longer tight, begins to slide off of the horse, making his way towards the hot sand below. Now, next to him, Mr. Ben reaches out his hand and says, "Clay, take my hand and you won't fall. All you have to do is take my hand." And my Clay, now my cousin Clay, has two choices. I can hold on with all of my might and fall on the hot sand, or I can reach out and accept this free gift of salvation from falling on the ground. Now my cousin, being my cousin, chose, rather than to accept the free gift, he chose to hold on to the saddle with all of his strength, with all of his might, and he found himself smack face down in the dirt. Because he tried to do it his own way. He used his muscles, his strength, his power, his ability, and he fell. If, however, he had reached out and grabbed the free gift of salvation right next to him, Mr. Ben's hand, he wouldn't have fallen. This is the choice you have. Because of our sin, we're falling short of the glory of God. But God, in his love, sent Christ to die on the cross for our sins. And we simply must accept the free gift. What's amazing is when we do that, we have a new life. We have a new life, and this is what we're talking about all week. When we do that, when we've been saved from our sin, we begin a relationship with God. This morning, we removed something from the heart. We removed that mirror that represents ourselves, our tendency to look at ourself and think that ourself is more important than God, our tendency to trust and love ourselves more than God. But if we want to love God, if we want to incline our hearts to God, just like Joshua talks about, we have to first come to a place where we believe in Jesus Christ for salvation. And the moment that we do that, we are saved. And we start a relationship with God. My hope is tonight that everyone in this room has a relationship with God. My hope is tonight that if you don't have a relationship with God, if you're sitting here tonight and you don't know if you've actually done this, if you've actually believed in Jesus Christ for your salvation, that you'd get that figured out this week, that you'd talk to a counselor, that you'd talk to me, that you'd talk to a sponsor, that you'd get this settled this week.